All right, hello and welcome to The Hours. I'm joined by my good friends, Mark Cascio of Savvy Coaching and Shane Kuiper of The Healthy Competitor. Both pickleball players, one better than the other. You can guess who's a better pickleball player, and we'll tell you by the end of the episode. Excited to spend some time with my friends here. Maybe let's just share real quick where we're dialing in from. I'm dialing in from Phoenix, Arizona today. How about you, Mark?
I am at home in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Shane.
I'm grateful to not be in Phoenix. I'm in Newport Beach area, California.
And I'm just going to be flying out to go visit Shane here later this week. Okay. So that's what we're excited about. So as always, you know that we start off our hours episodes with the big question. We're thrilled to have Shane on as a guest for this week's episode, as Shane's going to be leading our Savvy Coaching community through a 1 month cohort and training them up. And this is a sneak preview in all of the content and the ideas that he's going to be leading us through. So welcome, Shane. Before we ask you the big question, Shane, I've got a small question, as we sometimes do. I've got a small question for Mark first and Shane second. Klay Thompson rumored to be signing or officially signing with the Dallas Mavericks. Mark first, Shane second. Do you like that signing for the Dallas Mavericks? Yes or no?
I'll go yes. I don't think you can go wrong with having good shooters around Luka and Kyrie, just for that reason. Although I do think past his prime, I saw something, maybe he's making like $50 million over 3 years, which that I don't know if I can get on board with. I think that's a lot of money for an older shooter coming off some injuries and not a great year. But again, I think shooting trumps all. And if we can surround those guys with shooting, probably not a bad thing.
Shane.
Yeah, I didn't think he was very good last year at all. So I wouldn't be surprised if he comes off the bench there by the end of the season. And it seems like $50 million is a bargain after some of these numbers that are going around in the NBA. Like,
it is, isn't it?
Yeah, it seems like he could have made more money, but he just wants a ring, it seems like. Not sure if it's going to happen.
I don't know if Dallas is the right place to go for a ring, to be honest, but we'll see.
Okay, I'm going to weigh in. I think I'm going to go strong. Terrible signing. Could have gotten way better assets for the money. And I think that he's washed. And I think that, yes, while I love his shooting, Mark, I just think you cannot have another minus defender on the floor with Luka and Kyrie. I think that's going to be a big trouble for them. But I hope I'm proved wrong, because just watching his mental journey last season, I actually felt really bad for him. As you saw him just like struggling with the difference between the player he thought he still was and the player that he was in reality. And even just like he was so vulnerable about that, it was even a little bit heartbreaking for me. So I hope he can figure it out and get to a place of health, which I think Shane's going to talk about. But that's kind of what prompted that question. Mark, it looked like you wanted to respond to that.
Well, I was going to say you got me with the minus defender on the floor with Luka and Kyrie, especially how many times Luka makes his team play 4-on-5.
Oh my God.
It might be like 3-on-5 with Klay out there. So, I guess I got to go. I don't like the signing overall. I thought Klay listened to the podcast. So I was trying to let him down gently.
I understand.
All right.
He probably is. We'll probably get a comment. Okay, here's the big question. We'll go with Shane first, because Shane, you're our guest of honor here. And take this any direction that you want. You know, this is something that I know myself and so many coaches and competitors and ex and current athletes struggle with. Do you personally love to win or hate to lose more?
It's really hard for me to unlearn the infamous Kobe answer to this question. I'll try to be authentic in my immaturity, when I'm operating in my unhealth. I would say that I really hate the feeling of not losing. Like I have a hard time falling asleep when I lose. So, but can I answer how I want to in health when I'm operating in health? And I'm not there yet. And that's why I created the Healthy Competitor, because this is like the infinite goal, is to be able to answer this question how Kobe did late in his career, which is neither. He competes to figure it out. And I love the idea of that, this idea of mastery. So early in his career, he was driven by rings. Late in his career, he was driven by this idea of mastering his craft and trying to figure it out.
You know, I really am glad that you went third door on that one as well. Okay, here's another follow-up question for you first, Shane, then Mark. Do we believe Kobe? Like when he answered it that way, like, do we actually believe him? Like, I think he mentally knew that that was what he was striving for, but do you think he actually got there? What do you think, Shane?
It seems like he kind of got there when he stopped playing basketball, like when he started realizing the importance of being a dad. But yeah, no, I don't think so. definitely not early in his career when he was just a, and when then we could talk about this later too, but like the whole alter ego that him and his sports psychologist created, like it was necessary for what he was going through. But that's a longer conversation. The Mamba mentality is what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Mark, what do you think? Do you believe him? And then maybe Mark, you can share in your experience with working with coaches. Is this something that do you believe him, A, and B? Is this something that you observe in a lot of the coaches that you consult with?
All right. Starting with Kobe, I think most of his career, we saw a very disingenuous Kobe and almost like wanting to imitate Michael Jordan and all of his speaking engagements. That's just the vibe that I got. And I think he even alluded to that. I think later we got the more authentic Kobe. So he probably got there at some point in his career. And like Shane said, probably after he was done playing, reflecting back on what he would want to get out of competition. And big question for me as far as do I hate to win or hate to lose? I mean, love to win or hate to lose more. It's tough. I would say it depends. I think early I hated to lose more than I loved to win. I hated to see the other team celebrate after winning. And I think when my identity was wrapped up in being a coach and just a basketball coach, it was, well, they're better than us. He or she is a better coach than me. And that was really, really hard to swallow. And as I grew as a coach, and what I try to help with coaches that I consult with is that if you're really convicted in what you're doing, how you're doing it, and why you're doing it, I think the results, I think I got to a place where I enjoyed the win more than I hated the lose, because if I felt like we were doing things the right way and a team beat us, I could tip my hat and I really could sleep pretty well at night knowing that we're doing what we're supposed to do. Tomorrow's another day. We're going to continue to get better every day and see where that takes us. So I guess a lot like Kobe, my answer to that question would change as I matured as a coach. And with coaches I work with, I would say a lot are, they probably design maybe their practices, their philosophy, their style of play around what they see and maybe absorb beliefs like we need to do this to win. And I want to do this because this program does that. And I would just encourage them to be authentic in what you do. And I think that question, as far as love to win, hate to lose, would answer itself like it did for me.
Yeah. You know, and I think that's why we're excited for Shane, for you to work with all of our coaches, because I think we've all seen that progression and journey in athletes and in coaches. And we want to help all of our savvy coaches along that journey. And I think that you're really equipped to do so. So maybe, Shane, if you could just kind of share a brief overview of your journey in the game and what brought you to this place of wanting to serve coaches in this way. And help our community get to know you a little bit before you get to lead us through the next month's consulting cohort.
Cool. Yes, happy to. Well, I grew up in the gym like most of us. Basketball was like passed down generationally from my great grandpa, like to my dad, who's really successful and kind of grew up in the shadow of Tom Kuiper, trying to live up to, he was on the best team at Arizona State ever started, ahead of draft picks, ranked number 3 in the country. And he's pretty well known in the Phoenix area for just his basketball personality, camps, TV personality on TV. So, yeah, there was some identity things growing up with that that I had to mature into. And I played. I was decent and got a spot to walk on at Arizona State. And then realized when I was there, my physical limitations, and also started to realize how much I valued the relational side of basketball even more than the competitive side of basketball. So started working with some organizations, nonprofit organizations after that, which has kind of led me to start my own thing in the Healthy Competitor. And I absolutely love this process of growing and maturing in my own life, and have kind of become addicted to the process of becoming the dad and husband that I want to be. And so the Healthy Competitor exists to create avenues and experiences for leaders and athletes and coaches to step into health. And I get to grow alongside them.
Love it. And I know I've benefited greatly from, you know, the handful of conversations that we've had on this topic, just you and I. Maybe just share real quick, like, what are, you've had some pretty cool experiences internationally.
Being able to I coached a professional team in Germany too. So that was, that part of the grind, watched a ton of film. Haven't coached at the high school level or the college level, I did some AAU stuff, club stuff. So yeah, I can absolutely relate and empathize with a lot of people in this cohort.
Mm-hmm. What I know you've gotten to work with a number of coaches over the past few years. What has been one observation or one thing that you've really felt good about that you've been able to help coaches with? Like, if a coach is like, man, why should I hang out with Shane over the next month? What would be your answer of, like, what's the problem you're solving?
One of the problems is, like, the unawareness that we have as coaches, and that, like, the projecting that we do, hurt people. And so if coaches aren't in touch with my own pain and my own past, and, then it just becomes projectile on the people that I'm working with, and working for.
I mean, that right there is what made me want to bring you on, because that is my pain point and why I started Savvy Coaching. Is I love basketball, but coaches stole my whole enjoyment of the process, and all of my organized basketball experiences were painful and frustrating, and all of my open gym pickup by myself working on my game experiences were exhilarating. I'm like, yeah. Shoot, why can't all of my basketball journey be so joy filled? And as coaches, we are the gatekeepers of hundreds and thousands of players' experience in the game. And I think that sometimes, oftentimes, too often, coaches are doing it for themselves and not aware of how they're impacting the entire experience of so many other people. And so that's why I just really value what you bring and what you do, Shane Away. I'm thrilled that you're going to get to share that with coaches this month. Have you had any experiences like that, Shane, or what would you say was, like, your primary motivation to go and share this with other coaches and not just have the learning for yourself?
Yeah, for sure. I was never coached in a way that, I would say it was, like, uplifting for me, or from a place of dignity. It was all fear-based motivation. And so when I started to learn about, like, the human brain and the way that, like, what's a sustainable way that we can coach and teach and parent, and love someone that's close to us, it was like, oh, this is actually fascinating to me. And I just kept learning and keep learning more and more and more. And so, yeah, that's where the heart of it comes from. And it's also like, well, why not bring others along? Because I absolutely believe in coaching. Like, I think it's the coolest job. And I don't think that we have to do it the same way that we were coached. And I don't think we have to do it the same way that our dad treated us. You know, I think that we can actually learn about, you know, trauma, and we can learn about the brain, and we can learn like what's a sustainable way to teach. And yeah, I'm on board with what you guys are doing too. Like, I love it, and I feel very aligned and paralleled to the stuff that you guys say and the stuff I've learned from you guys too. So yeah, I'm dialed in for a month with you guys.
Let's go.
Shane, I'm glad you said we don't have to do it the way we were coached. That's where my mind was going to as you and Tyler were talking, because this is stealing joy or taking the fun out of it for players. It's just a never ending cycle, because we usually coach the way we were coached. And until you're exposed to new ideas, new methods, more transformational coaching, you just don't know that there's something else out there. So unfortunately, we're not exposed to it, or we, you know, I'd say the majority are not. I know the aha moment for me is when I saw, because I was guilty of this, and when I saw a better way, that's when I was immediately hooked. And at Savvy, mm-hmm. we're revolutionizing the way the game is taught and played. And it's why Tyler and I know you with the Healthy Competitor, are so passionate about what we do.
Yeah. And Mark, maybe I'll throw it to you to go through the mailbag and the questions that we've received for Shane and any additional ones that you do. But I'll share this quick anecdote that I think should be a warning sign for all coaches. And I just saw it last night. A really good high school player came into my gym last night, and we're training. And the player comes into the gym smiling, happy. I hadn't seen this player in a month because they've been with their high school program. Hey, I'm so happy to be back. This is great. They're just like bubbling with positive energy. Then the moment we roll out the ball and start training and they hit some adversity of missing some shots or not being able to complete some technique, all of a sudden, stone face and no joy. And it actually sucked the life out of me as a coach as well. And in that moment, I was like, this is the problem. This player is a product of basketball culture. That mistakes are bad. When you fail, you should be embarrassed. Like, perfection is the goal, as opposed to let's enjoy the process of getting better. And I see that time and time again when players come into the Savvy gym from basketball culture, is that you have to compete in this way, right? That it looks like intense. Winning is the only possible outcome, right? I have to, perfection is the key. And I think that is unhealthy. And that's why I love what you're doing, Shane, is like, there is a different way to be a healthy competitor. You don't have to stop being a competitor, but you can do it in a much healthier way. And so it just hit me again last night as this is so needed, because that player, that kid, didn't learn to play games in that way. They didn't naturally. They learned it from us as coaches, right? When you see a kid play hide and seek, when they're just a kid, they're smiling and laughing as they're getting tagged, right? But then all of a sudden, at some point, we as coaches teach players that you can't be smiling and laughing when you compete and lose. You have to be really angry when you lose. And that's what breaks my heart. And that's why I'm pumped up for you to share what you're going to share, Shane. Okay. Throw it over to you, Mark, to take us through some mailbag stuff.
Yep.
Can I respond to that real quick?
Yeah, please.
Yeah. So who knows what's going on at home too. So we always want to give credit to that, like, and be attuned to, like, yes, it's a basketball culture problem. But what I find in adolescent basketball players is like, yeah, we gotta be aware that there's some pressures and stressors coming from outside sources. And it could be just his own need for success in basketball to feel adequate, but he's clearly hurting. That's what you experienced. And then comparison, Like we have to learn what to do with comparison as coaches, because we're, Mark, you touched on this earlier, like we're always comparing ourselves to things that are out of our control. And I'm a big Brené Brown fan, but she was talking about comparison recently, and it's not like, it's not, we can't ever try to stop comparing ourselves. Like it's actually like an autonomic nervous system response, like comparison. It's just what we do with the comparison. So like, for example, Tyler, you need to be aware that when you walk into the room, people are always going to compare themselves to your hair. Like I will never have hair like that. And so does that, so the, that. You can't, you can try. I can try to be better. but then a lot of times if we're not aware that we are comparing, then it drives us into this shame-based result, or it drives us into this I'm better than. So comparison, for the most part, it's either I'm better than or I'm worse than, and both are bad, both are toxic. And so this kid, when he walked into your gym, he was probably comparing himself to someone or something, some standard that he wasn't living up to, and it drove him to a physical and emotional response that was pretty toxic in the environment. So there's great hope in that, and there's great opportunity for growth.
I mean, that's really good, that awareness, that lens.
Yeah.
So what would be, gosh, I'm probably getting ahead of ourselves here, but this is kind of getting into, so for those of you that are familiar with the podcast, we kind of do like a game or activity or drill of the week. And I asked Shane to kind of think about, okay, well, what's an activity that maybe he's gonna go deeper into over the next month, or an exercise or something? And, you know, what would you do with that situation? Or what's a process that a coach or a person can go through when we realize that we have awareness of that comparison?
Yeah, the best awareness tool that I'm trained in is called the Johari window. It's a therapy tool. I think it's something that coaches should absolutely be trained in, almost like a necessary tool that if you want to get into this industry, there's four different panes to this window. I don't think we could really do it right now.
Something that you'll plan to take coaches through, over the next month?
It wasn't what I had drawn up so far in just my initial conversation with Mark, but I can shift easily to it. It's a cool little 15-minute.
You use mystery really well there. Now I want to know what the four panes of the Johari window are. I'm about to jump on Google. So really good job on the mystery, right there. Yeah,
I could do it. I could do it real quick. But
maybe go deep into it, or even just give us like one or something. You know, one thing we love to do on the hours is like, we love to give one tangible tool. When you go through a game of the week, we're like, hey, here's a game you can play. And people are like, oh, that's cool. I don't know how to do it. And then they come back to us to go deeper. So maybe like give them one kind of small tangible piece of it.
Yeah. Well, okay. So if you could picture a window with four panes, the bottom right goal is the goal. The bottom right window, I can use my screen here. So this is known to me and known to others, but we usually start up here in the top left, which is known to me, not known to others. Then we go down here, which is known to you, not known to me. This top right, this one, whichever, it's probably inverted, but this is the trickiest one to identify because it's not known to me and not known to others. So it's like unknown to both parties. And as you work through this, and you can actually have your athletes, it'd be cool to do with your staff too, is start to write down things that I know about myself that you also know about me. Like things that I know about myself that you don't know. So like my secrets, and this would be in the safe environment. But there's also a safe way to do that. Things that you know about me that I don't know about me. The things that we both don't know are down here. And so as the goal is that this window pane comes down here. So this is the biggest one. This is the biggest one up here. This one gets a little smaller. This one gets a little smaller. This one gets definitely smaller. But what I experience is that with kids, this window pane is pretty big. There's a lot of stuff that you don't know about me. There's a lot of stuff that I don't know about myself. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I explained it wrong in the beginning of that because it was converted.
I don't know about me right now. I feel like I want to do this exercise right now with you guys.
Yeah, I was going to say, we definitely hit an awesome game or exercise of the week right there. And I would highly suggest we do that in the cohort because I think every coach could take that back to their staff and their players. Mm-hmm. I mean, having players do that, especially high school age, even college age, boys and girls, they've probably never done an exercise like that. I think it'd be really, really valuable.
Yeah. And I mean, that's honestly something that's popping up in the community a lot is – like, what's a tool I can do with my players during our team retreat? Or what's a tool I can do with my players here as we go to team camp? Or what's a tool we can do in the fall? Because I think, you know, besides all the wonderful self-discovery of tools like that, anytime that you can get vulnerable and authentic, it bonds a group.
Absolutely.
Because coaches have to go first with that. What's a fun game I can play? Oh, yeah, fun games are good and everything. But, like, just vulnerability, I think, is what you're looking for to bond. I double down on what Mark said. I think really going through the nuts and bolts of how to do that and doing it with the cohort would be really valuable. But you'll find too, and you know, Shane, like as you get to know and get feedback from our coaches as you work with them, both from the live calls that we do once a week, where you'll be consulting a group of coaches through your content, but even more so from all the questions that come in from the coaches watching recorded, because it's the people that can come on live during that 1 hour, the tip of the iceberg of the, you know, couple hundred that are going to be following along recorded. You're gonna be responding to exactly what they need. I mean, Mark and I have done this so many times. We've got a plan for the call, but then all of a sudden, the first 10 minutes, we're getting like the pain points are coming up, and we just go at them. So I know you'll have a plan, but I also know that you are really good at kind of responding to the needs of the group that you're leading.
Yeah, thanks, Todd.
Yeah. Okay, right. Mark, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say mailbag.
Yeah.
This is all related to, so this is a great question. For Shane and everything that we've just talked about, Tyler shared the story of a player coming in his academy, great attitude, missed a couple shots, hanging the head, body language gets really bad. And we're talking about players being able to just deal with competition, right? And like learning zone, performance zone, those things. So let's say you got a high school head coaching job. Where do you start in building your culture? And I'll actually read the question to you. It says, when taking over a new program, assume high school boys, what would you do in week one to start building your championship culture? And what checkpoints do you look for along the way? So first steps into building culture, what you got, Shane?
Yeah. Sounds like someone's struggling trying to figure this out. So I would have some questions to start with, not answers. But here's some cool things to possibly think about. Like, you have to know your personal values. You have to go through an exercise, probably with someone who's been trained in helping others identify their personal core values, because every decision you make, especially early on when you take on a new adventure, a new venture, like you have to know that every decision you make either leads you towards who you're going to be next or away. And so if you haven't identified, and I like to, the way that I was trained in it from a sports psychologist in Ohio, in this exercise of identifying core values is, you got to have three. You have to have three, and you have to have them ranked 1, 2, and 3, and know that every decision I make, am I going to get these 14-year-olds up out of bed at 5 a.m. to practice before school? Is that leading me toward my top core value or away? Because it's doing one of those two things. Am I going to yell right now at this 16-year-old? Like, that's either moving me toward the championship culture I want to create or away. And I don't have answers to that, but that's number one, is you have to be trained, and you have to sit with somebody and be aware of who and what matters to you, and have them ranked 1, 2, and 3. And then after that, the second step I would say would be you have to kind of label your top three values as a program. so that everybody knows what the standards are. So I see a lot of times where people don't know what their personal values are, but they know what their top three, like you could call them pillars or values as a program. But since you're the leader, you got to know how you connect your values to the values of the organization. It's incredibly important.
Yeah, I know one thing we talk a lot about in Savvy is eliminating decisions for coaches. And if you're clear on your values, you can make values-based decisions instead of emotional decisions or just kind of throwing darts out there. In this situation, I'm making this decision because this is the way I feel. So, having those values and sharing those early with your team would be really valuable. Here's a question kind of along those lines. Is let's say... And this is a me question because I get this question a lot with coaches that I work with. Let's say we have our values and those help us establish some non-negotiables, which I always encourage coaches to do really early in the process. I think non-negotiables help us have a healthy player-coach relationship. It helps the player succeed, and it helps us just have a good team, healthy dynamic. Let's say one of my non-negotiables is being on time. I'm all for progressive consequences. And day one, or the first time somebody's late, how do you handle that? And then how would you progress if that player continues to be late in the future?
Yeah. And then what happens when your best player is late? And then what happens when the manager is late? This is complicated, right? Having hard lines like that, black and white is really hard, because I think the healthier we get, the more okay we are with the gray, the more we are like in the uncomfortability of like having judgment decisions and having people be upset with us, you know, based on making a judgment decision based on personal or unique circumstances. So that's a really, really enmeshed, complicated topic, but I love talking about things like this because human, like what in coaching, you're choosing highly, highly relational job, and so to take the relationship out of it and just have hard lines and non-negotiables it's incredibly, deeply more complicated than what coaches give credit to. That makes sense. I don't know if I said that super well.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. It is difficult.
Well, I have a follow up on that, Shane. So, okay. So in your opinion, is it healthy, using the word healthy, is it healthy for a coach to have non-negotiables?
Yeah, sure. As long as it's not like an identity marker where it's like at all costs, like at the cost of the relationship. But then at that point, it's not a non-negotiable, it's a negotiable, you know? So, okay. Like Tyler, that's a really good question. I guess my answer is no, it's not healthy. Like, and maybe this is semantics, like just in the language of it, but no, if the relationship and growth and development and mentoring is why you're in this business, then no, you probably don't have these non-negotiables.
Yeah, I really love semantics because I think that the unexamined life is not worth living, as our guy Socrates said. And so I think let's examine the words we use and what we actually mean by those words.
Yeah.
I think I agree. I would agree with you. I don't think it's healthy to have non-negotiables. You know, the language that we've used here around Savvy more often is standards. Because I think a lot of times when coaches do say non-negotiables, they just mean standards. Like this is a standard that we're going to commit to. Now, I think the difference between a non-negotiable and a standard is something that you're attempting and shooting for. Whereas a non-negotiable is like A, B, black, white, right? Whereas standard is a little bit more of a continuum and a spectrum as we are attempting to achieve excellence and follow through with our commitments, but recognizing that the human condition is to fall short.
Love that.
Right. And so I think that's a savvy lens that we offer up that I know that you are aligned with, but it's hard to have that lens. And that I think is part of what you're going to help our savvy coaches develop more of, is the lens through which to view what maybe was a non-negotiable for them and move it towards more of a standard or a shared ideal.
Well said.
All right, we got last mailbag question here. What is a common trait the best teams that you've seen have? And what would be maybe first step or the way that you would instill or develop those in your team?
Yeah, so again, I have a question to off the jump is what's the marker for best? That's a complicated word. In my opinion, it's not the team that won their last game. Like, right? That's the goal for coach. Most coaches, we want to win our last game of the season. But best teams don't win their last game. Only want like so. Yeah, the metrics that we have to change, not just being the scoreboard or the last game of the season. So the best, the most joy teams that I've worked with or coaches that I work with, they deal with conflict, so they don't avoid conflict. Their coaches are completely okay with people being upset with them, and these coaches ask amazing questions. The quality of the questions that these leaders ask are so engaging and curious and thought provoking. And because of that, there's a level of vulnerability from the leader, which develops trust. So that's how I would answer that question. Like they resolve conflict, repair relational damage, and there's just a high level of trust.
I'm really glad that you highlighted the assumed definition of best, and then redefined it, because initially, right when I heard the question, I think when most of us, we think best is like, oh, championship level, successful teams. And if that is where your mind went, and by you, I mean everyone listening, if that's where your mind went, then you need to join Shane for this month. Not that we're not trying to win, right? But like, we need to examine some unexamined lenses that we have. And, you know, then on the back end, I will share this because, I mean, I still struggle with this. You use the word trust. If as a coach, when your team loses or performs poorly, if you immediately question the commitment level, the belief, and the trust of your players and parents, then it is not a best team. Like, I think the best teams are like, you can lose, you can perform poorly, and there is no fear and no panic that you're going to lose the buy-in or support of your stakeholders, the players, the parents, you know, your administration, whatever. That's best, right? Whereas most of us as coaches do feel we question the connection and support when we perform poorly. And that, I think, is the dichotomy of what we're trying to move away from and the standard we're trying to move to, both as a coach and as a leader and as we build a team that's built on trust and not built on outcomes. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what Shane is trying to teach us in what being a healthy competitor is, because it's very unhealthy to go through a season when you question everything that you've built based on the outcome of a single game.
So good.
I'll say this too. Sometimes, because I've been a part of coaching staffs that do it the right way and have done it the wrong way, and I just think it's a sign of maybe insecurity, but oftentimes that reaction is based on like one or two possessions, right? One or two possessions go your way and we're in the locker room, we feel very secure and high level of trust in what we're doing. And, you know, two possessions don't go the right way, and then everything is the opposite. So it's like very zero sum in a lot of cases. And that was kind of my response to the big question, is like, the more I was convicted and the more I believed in what we were doing, the wins and losses were less high and less low. And as a head coach, the highs are higher and the lows are lower for you. But the more secure you are with yourself, and like Shane said to start the podcast today, your values, understanding your values, then you're going to be way more in the middle and be able to respond less emotional to the good things and the bad things in your program.
Awesome. Shane,
there's a, there's a, oh, go ahead, Shane. I just thought of this when we have Coley and I, my wife, we have close friends in Raleigh, North Carolina, and we just went out there and were with them for a weekend. And she's a high school volleyball coach, and she took on the JV for the first time. And the athletic director said, what's your goal? Like, what's your goals for this season?" And I think I'll always remember what she said, because it's so amazing. She said, "Number one, I want everyone to finish the season," which, like, that's a pretty cool goal. Like, non-committed, like freshmen, like girls. And then number two, it was, "I want everyone to like volleyball more than when they started the season." And so, like, if she was able to make decisions based on those two things throughout the season, like that, like, there's a good chance that's going to be your best team. I think, yeah, those are really cool goals, a really cool culture thing that, I mean, start to think along those lines if you're coaching kids. What were you about to ask, Tyler? Sorry.
I love that. I was just going to kind of start to wrap things up a little bit, and maybe just throw it to you to say, okay, you know, what do you want to say to coaches that to inspire them or encourage them to come and show up live and invest the 1 hour a week with you over the next month? Yeah. And then maybe, Mark, we can tell them where they can sign up.
Every time you step toward health, every time I step toward health, everyone around me gets healthier as a result. And so this is really hard work. Like, the stuff that we're going to do, the work is for me, right? And so if you as a coach aren't willing to do the work in your own growth and development and to look at your past and to look at, like, oh, this is where I'm falling short because this is how I was coached, or this is my relationship with a father figure or lack of, if you aren't willing to do that work, then it's going to be tough. Like, this cohort that I'm going to lead us through, it's going to be tough, and you're either going to have to fake it or, you're going to lose interest. But I promise you that if you're willing to do the work and to look inward, you're going to step toward health in your life, and everyone around you is going to benefit from that. And you're not even going to have to try. Also, I think that your team is going to enjoy being around you more. And I think that they're going to enjoy being around each other more. And I think organically, some of the stuff that you want might happen, just as a result of you stepping toward health. So I'm excited.
I'm excited as well. Mark, where should people go that are listening to this to join our community, sign up for the cohort to work with Shane?
Yeah, we've moved our community to a new platform. We've got hundreds of coaches already in there. If you're not in there, the link will be below to join the community. And if you go to the classroom on our new platform, you will see our July cohort. And if you purchase that cohort, you'll get to spend 4 weeks with Shane. Pretty confident after today that he's going to share some actionable tips for you to have your best season yet. And if you buy that, you will also get 1 month access to all of our cohorts and all of our savvy content for the entire month. So it's a no-brainer just to spend the time with Shane for 4 weeks, but also if you want Race and Space, Lock Left, Rose Series, any of our film breakdown, just whatever you can bring back to your program alongside the cohort would be available to you by buying that in our school community. Again, link is below if you're not already a part.
Awesome. Shane, thank you so much for giving your time. Thank you so much for what you're going to do over the month of July. I'll see you in California in a few days. And thanks, everybody, for tuning in to the hours. I'm Tyler. This is Mark. This is Shane. Till next time, stay savvy.
Stay savvy. And Shane's the better pickleball player.
True.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.